The Paths to Parenthood podcast is designed to support those needing to use a donor to build their family. I'm Becky, also known as Defining Mum, and I'm also the founder of Paths to Parenthood. I'm the mum to three amazing girls, all thanks to egg donation.
And I'm Hayley King, the founder of All Things Donor Conception. I'm both a donor-conceived person and, in a twist of fate, the parent of donor-conceived children with my lovely wife.
Our aim is to open up conversations about this incredible route to parenthood, focusing on some of the nuances and complexities that it can bring.
Our hope is to provide different perspectives, information, reflection, and validation as we openly discuss different topics, share stories, and ask you for your input.
We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome back to the Paths to Parenthood podcast, and we're here for the final episode of this series where I am going to be joined by Christiana, Evgenia and Anastasia from Oversee Why Egg Bank, and also my co-host Hayley, who won't be speaking too much today because the lurgy has caught up with Hayley and she's going to be coughing and spluttering her way through if we get her to speak too much. But you're here, aren't you, Hayley, in spirit?
I am very much, yes. Excuse my voice, but I'm looking forward to listening to the conversation today and hopefully being able to contribute in some way if my voice holds out. So yeah, apologies.
So before I get the lovely ladies who are joining me today to introduce themselves, I just wanted to share some amazing news that we're very proud to be officially partnering with Oversee Why Egg Bank to provide those who are using Oversee Why the access to Paths to Parenthood as a license for 6 months, allowing them to be able to access the support that we provide, which is amazing. And that's always been what we really want to do, is to work with banks and clinics that really see the value in patient care and really understand why it's so important to have that support throughout the whole journey. So we're delighted to announce that today. And on that, I want to come firstly to Christiana to introduce yourself. Christiana, just tell everyone a little bit about you, who you are and what your role is.
Hello, I'm Christiana. I'm the Scientific Director and Head of Fertility Services at Oversee Why. I've been an embryologist for over 20 years, and I'm really proud to be leading this amazing egg bank with a group of really wonderful people.
Thank you. And we have the pleasure, you will know if you've listened to our earlier episodes, of visiting Cyprus, which is where Oversee Why is based, and to meet the wider team. And they are amazing. I'm going to come to you, Evgenia, to introduce yourself first in your role, and then Anastasia.
Yeah, I'm very happy for this podcast and to see you again and speak with you again. I'm Evgenia, I'm the Oversee Why Egg Bank Manager here with my colleague Anastasia and all the team in Oversee Why, because we are not only the two of us, we have a team behind us that they are running everything from recruiting the donor till the expert of the eggs. Yeah, it's Anastasia.
Hello, my name is Anastasia. Thank you for having this podcast with us. It was a pleasure to meet you also in person when you are here in Cyprus. My main role is patient coordinator, and I have a background in embryology. I'm very pleased to assist and guide patients and couples through this amazing and rolling coaster experience of finding their donor. It's amazing experience because the end result is having their own child at their hand, in their hand. So it's very nice, the outcome of this dream that Oversee Why achieve.
Yeah, and I can't tell you enough how knowledgeable these two ladies are. I mean, Hayley and I threw so many questions at them when we came to visit last September, and we were really blown away by the knowledge, but also the care that is put in place for not just patients, but for the donors as well. And that really, really came across. And so today, what we're going to be focusing on is busting some myths when it comes to having treatment at Oversee Why in Cyprus. And actually, a lot of the myths that we're going to cover today were things that Hayley and I both thought before we went out there and actually saw for ourselves what was happening. So we've got six different myths to go through today. The first one I'm going to start with, I'm going to come to Evgenia and Anastasia, is all around the anonymity laws in Cyprus, because I think I know, Hayley, when we spoke to you first at ESHRE last year, we thought that all donation in Cyprus was completely anonymous. So would love for you to share what the reality actually is and how you work at OVCY.
Yeah, that's a good question. And we need to clear up this point. So under the Cyprus legislation, the Cyprus legislation, the system actually allows for both anonymous and non-anonymous donors. This means that donors themselves have the right to choose the level of anonymity they are comfortable with. So some donors prefer to remain completely anonymous. And of course, that choice is fully respected. And other donors may choose to provide their consent to be identifiable in the future. And we call them ID release donors. So I would like to take this opportunity to explain what is ID release donors. What does it mean? So it means that if a child is born through the egg donation, and once the child becomes 18 years old, and only if their parents have informed them about their origins, that the babies from an egg donation treatment, the child has the legal right to seek information about their donor. And in UK, the law, the HFPA law, accepts ID release donors only. So it is important to emphasize that this right belongs to the child, okay, not to the parents. And it only applies when the donor has agreed for this type of arrangement, either to become an ID release or not an ID release donor. So in summary, Cyprus offers flexibility about this matter, yeah, and respects choices for both donors and the families by supporting both anonymous and non-anonymous donation pathways.
Thank you. And what do you find is the sort of percentage split between those who are choosing to donate under the ID release versus those who are now still looking at the anonymous donation?
Yeah, I think nowadays it's 50-50. You're asking about the donors, correct? We have 50-50. Some of them decided to be fully anonymous and some others non-anonymous. Now it's 50-50. In the past, we have more donors that they were willing to be anonymous, but nowadays they prefer to become non-anonymous. And I believe that in the future we'll have the most of them will be ID release, non-anonymous, because they are interested for the future. They are asking, and if they have this because of the law provides to the donors this flexibility. I think it's a good opportunity for them, and how is they are thinking of it, to maybe find the baby in the future. Of course, if the baby is willing to find the donor.
Yeah, it does give those options as well. So we were quite pleased to hear that it seemed to be shifting more towards the ID release. And I know you partner with some UK clinics to provide donor eggs. And for that to happen, you need to also mirror and follow the HFEA legislation and how we run things over here. And that kind of leads me into myth number two, which is around Cyprus not having that proper regulation or oversight. And Christiana, I'd love to come to you on this, because again, as we came out to visit last year, we had no idea that there was a difference in legislation across Cyprus from the Republic of Cyprus to the other part of Cyprus. So I'd love you to just explain a little bit around what people should be looking for if they want to be able to come and have that option for an ID release donor.
Yeah, that's another really important myth to bust. So there's confusion because the Republic of Cyprus, which is where we are based in Nicosia, operates under the EU Tissue and Cells Directive. So that means that we have very strict government oversight. We have to have special licensing. We have regular inspections. So that's in line with what happens in the rest of Europe and in the UK. The north side of the island, which is currently occupied, doesn't have a regulatory framework, so it doesn't fall under the EU tissue directive umbrella. So clinics and egg banks that operate there are not licensed and regulated by the EU. They are still perhaps regulated in their own manner under their own committees, I would imagine, but they do not fall under the EU tissue directive. Now, this means that potentially medical insurances and things like that that you would assume apply to the rest of Europe would not apply there. And that's a big distinction, and that's something that patients need to understand before embarking on treatment and before making a decision on where to have their treatment. So at OverCY, we operate under this very strict regulated environment, and we choose and have to adhere to strict quality, safety, traceability standards. We need to be registered on a European platform where each egg gets allocated a specific code in order for it to be permitted to be exported to another country. So everything is in place to protect both the recipient patient and the donor. And that's why the HFEA regulates external egg banks for import to the UK. So this is what they look at. They look at the traceability and the regulatory framework and things like that. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to export to many European countries. So it's a very important distinction. There is regulation, there is oversight, and there are government committees in charge of IVF, in charge of licensing. They perform regular inspections. So it's much in line with what the HFEA does and what occurs in the UK. So in that respect, we're very similar, and patients shouldn't be apprehensive about our regulatory framework.
Yeah, and that's really reassuring to hear. And I think we saw all of the checks that you were putting in place on within the clinic, but also for those eggs that were being exported. And it was fascinating to watch a set of eggs being put together, ready to fly over to the UK to one of the UK clinics. And that links in really well to the third myth, which was that UK clinics can't use donor eggs from abroad, when in fact they can, provided that they meet certain standards and regulation and the laws within the UK. So, Christiana, just carrying on with you, what are those standards that they need to meet, and how does it work with UK clinics?
So in the UK, in order to become licensed to export to any clinic, the recipient clinic would have to apply to the HFEA for something called an ITE. So this is like an approval for a tissue establishment to send gametes or embryos to the specific recipient clinic. So we provide the recipient clinic with our licenses, any third-party agreements we have with courier companies, for example, our traceability systems, our protocols, so all our standard operating procedures. We send all this documentation to the recipient clinic. They then provide this to the HFEA, and the HFEA goes through everything and gives the clinic the approval on the permission to import the eggs. So that doesn't happen just because the eggs are coming from Cyprus. This would happen if the eggs were coming from any third country across the world. And that's how a clinic or an egg bank becomes licensed to collaborate with UK clinics. It's very strict, and it can take months. So we are currently at the end of that process, hopefully. It just proves that a clinic is operating at the standard that the HFEA expects and the standard at which UK clinics are operating at as well. And it's a way for them to protect the recipient patients from any type of malpractice, really.
Yeah, and that, again, is really reassuring. And I think it's just something where, if you're either having treatment abroad or you're having treatment in the UK and the eggs are coming from abroad, it is reassuring to know that there are those checks in place. And I know I've spoken to you, and I've obviously seen it in the clinic, and I've also spoken to UK clinics that have been through that process, and it is really rigorous and can take time. So yeah, that is really helpful to know about. And just moving on now to kind of the person behind the donor egg. So thinking about the donor, we had the misconception or the myth, we heard the myth that donors don't receive psychological screening abroad. And that was something that we were pleasantly surprised to learn more about when we came to visit last September. So Anastasia or Evgenia, could you just share a little bit more around how the donors are looked after and what's included with that psychological screening?
In our CY egg bank, this is a myth, because in general, we screen all our donors comprehensive and include detailed medical and genetic evaluation, infectious diseases, and all our donors, they go through, if I may say, mandatory psychological evaluation. This psychological screening ensures that our donors are fully understand the implication of donation. It's very important for us that they understand what this means for themselves and also for the family that they will help. That they also are emotionally prepared for this process, because they take medication and we need to reassure that they are emotionally prepared and ready to undergo the treatment and the egg collection. And also to make sure that they are making informed and voluntary decisions, including anonymity and including other things that they need to decide. In addition, going to support is often provided before, during, and after their egg donation. Our CY team are behind them all the time to support them, not only during their donation, but also before and after, because the well-being of our donors is one of the important aspects of our CY egg bank.
And that's something we really saw when we were there. And if you haven't already listened to the episode where we spoke to a donor who had donated multiple times at your clinic, who spoke so highly of the care that she received while she was there. And we also got an opportunity to meet with the psychologist who conducts the screenings as well. And again, knowing that that was something that was a core part of the process, and that actually there are donors that are told, no, I'm sorry, you can't donate because we don't feel you're ready, I think was a really important thing to have.
I would like to add something, Becky, regarding the psychological screening. Let's be honest, here in Cyprus, it's not mandatory. The psychological assessment and screening of the donors is not mandatory. But OVACY is the first who add this and set up this psychological screening to all the donors that we have in our program. And this is something that, as Anastasia mentioned before, is something that we need to offer this support to the donors to be sure that they understand everything, and their decision is something that they it will not affect their future. So yes, it's not mandatory by our law, but we have it as a mandatory step for all the donors.
Yeah, thanks, Evgenia. I think actually as well, that was one of the most reassuring things about our visit, was to see the care that the donors had. And actually, talking about myths, in the UK, a lot of people think that it's mandatory that all donors have counselling in the UK, so sperm and egg donors, when actually, again, it doesn't always happen either. So just because you're in the UK having treatment. So like I say, it's great to see that OVACY have actually taken it upon, you know, yourselves to introduce that for your donor pathway, because it isn't happening everywhere, and it should be, really, in this day and age, isn't it, Becky?
As a parent as well, that reassures me, because I want to know that donor has been looked after. I don't know whether our donor had that level of screening or kind of understanding, but particularly if you're moving more into ID release, there are longer term implications and things to be aware of, and the fact that anonymity can't be guaranteed anymore. Christiana, did you want to add anything?
I wanted to add that international guidelines do recommend psychological evaluation, but it is not mandatory. And especially in Europe, there are no that it's written nowhere that these assessments should be mandatory, but they really should. And we've actually submitted a paper for the ESHRE conference this year based on this. So we have shown that even if you do mandatory psychological evaluation on 100% of your prospective donors, you will not end up with a fewer number of donors. I think this is what banks are afraid of, donor banks, both sperm and especially egg, because there are so few egg donors. And if you were to screen all of them, I think people are worried that perhaps you'll end up having none suitable. But we proved that over a 2-year period where we were performing our mandatory psychological assessments, the rejection rate was under 1%. So it's nothing really, but you're rejecting a very small number of donors. But what you're doing is you're ensuring that the donors that are donating are fully aware of what they are doing, and they are fully understanding of the consent they are giving, because it's a huge deal for someone to provide their genetic material as a gift to somebody else. Now, donors are compensated for loss of earnings, and a big part of this is altruicity. But how can you be fully altruistic without fully understanding what you are doing? And so there's a big element of understanding consent. And psychological evaluation isn't just about ensuring that the donor is not, you know, is mentally stable and emotionally stable, which is a huge factor, but it's also about the donor fully understanding the consent she is giving and the implications of that consent for the future, especially in cases where we're talking about non-anonymous donors, where a child will potentially be in touch with them in 18 years' time, and understanding and acknowledging that that will happen and being okay with that, because, you know, you want to be able to be responsive to that contact at the time and be fully okay with the decision you made potentially 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just a one-time decision. It has implications further down the line, and it's something that everybody needs to be aware of. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that ESHRE. It'd be great to see that adopted by
more. Let's see.
Thanks. We're still waiting. Well, fingers crossed. It sounds really, really important. And I think, so building on this, there's also an assumption. It's quite a big thing to go abroad. I think particularly if you're in the UK and you think you're going abroad for what is a medical treatment, you are putting so much trust in a clinic or bank. And I think there can be that assumption that there's lower quality care or screening taking place abroad. And I'd just love to hear a little bit more around probably more of the medical side of screening. And we talked about the psychological side. Just what do donors go through when it comes to that perspective?
I believe here the key message is simple. It's not about where the treatment happens. It's about who is providing and the treatment and whether they meet the right standards. Here in the case of OvaCY, the donor selection and the screening are taken very seriously. And the donors go through an extensive evaluation process, which includes detailed medical history, genetic screening, infectious disease testing, and psychological assessment. The goal is to ensure not only the health of the donor, but also the safety and the well-being of the recipient and the future child. On the top of that, laboratories handling eggs and embryos operated under controlled conditions using advanced technology and quality assurance protocols. I think it's also worth noting that cross-border fertility care often involves collaboration between clinics in different countries. That means patients can benefit from specialized expertise. So I think the idea that treatment abroad equals lower standards doesn't hold up.
Yeah, I would like to add that for our donor egg screening process, and what we do is we send the bloods abroad. So we work with an international company called iGenomics, and we send all the donor bloods to Spain for screening. So they're a huge company, very well known. They've been around for many years. And we chose to work with them instead of a local lab, because we could have done that, because we know that their standards are high, they're internationally accredited, and we trust their results. So all the genetics, all the screening of the donors happens in Spain. Even though we're based in Cyprus, we take the blood and we bear the cost of sending it by courier to the iGenomics lab in Valencia, and that's where all the donor screening takes place. We've also recently started extracting DNA, which is another process that is not mandatory. And the DNA that we extract from the donors is kept locally at the Cyprus Institute of Neurology and Genetics, and that is kept there indefinitely. So we pay a fee to keep the DNA there in case we need to screen in the future for any type of genetic issue that may arise within the offspring. So we're thinking ahead. You know, we're not in this to make a quick buck, and you know, it's a business at the end of the day. And I read somewhere that the human egg is considered one of the greatest commodities in the modern world, which when you read something like that, especially as an embryologist, it just doesn't sit right. And we don't think of it like that. But to us, you know, the ultimate goal is for our recipient patients to have their baby. And sometimes, and we've seen that happen over the years, you can screen for a number of conditions, but something may arise in the future, and we want to protect our recipient parents and the offspring and be able to help them in the future, because it's really important to have access to that genetic material. And I mean, you wouldn't normally do something like this, but we have the option to do it because we have the bloods, so the DNA is there. So why not keep it? You're protecting or potentially helping a future child if there is ever a need for any extensive screening of the biological material coming from the donor.
Yeah. And again, that is really reassuring to hear, because as a parent, I mean, for me, in terms of when we went and used an egg donor 10 years ago, I don't believe that was done. And it was always felt a little bit down to, if something were to happen where we needed that information, it's down to the clinic trying to contact that donor, having the up-to-date contact details, being able to find her, whether or not she responds. And it just means that you haven't got that reassurance that that is there should it be needed in the future. So that's really great to hear. Thank you. And finally, I think the other aspect is when it comes to record keeping. So obviously here in the UK, the HFEA is the governing body that makes sure that we've got all of the records when it comes to donation, that it's kept in a particular way. And again, when it comes to using eggs from abroad in the UK, this will need to be matching that regulation. And I know, Hayley, you had quite a few questions around this in terms of record keeping and how that is kept in Cyprus, but I'd love to just hear a little bit more around how that's maintained. How long do you hold the information for? And also, how often are you in contact with donors after they've donated to update that information as well?
Thank you for asking me this. This is a very, it's a concern that we are hearing a lot, but it is a myth that we don't keep proper records of information of the donors. In general, in EU legislation, egg banks operate under strict and legal and medical requirements when it comes to documentation and especially traceability of the donor. Even if a donor is kept, and all our donor is carefully recorded in our secure system, including details like medical history, screening, genetic tests, consents, and recently, as we said before, we keep DNA extraction in case we need any genetic information in the future. For all, this is important to make sure that the donors give their consent about it, they are aware, and they consent and in order to keep their DNA and structure. In general, organizations like our Ekbank or CY follow strict protocols regarding documentation and keeping records of the donor information. It is very accurate, recorded, and secure stored and fully traceable. It's not just for the best practice, it's just to give the best treatment and feedback for the recipients who will get that specific donor, because for us it's very important for the recipients to have a good experience with us and feel happy and comfortable that in the future, whatever they need, we are here for them. Traceability is actually a key principle in assisted reproduction technology. This means that every donated egg can be tracked. For example, for when the donor is donated until to the recipient, and also after that, if they have a pregnancy, if they give birth, where the resident of the recipient, the country of residence of the recipient is. So for us, everything is important throughout this traceability pathway, if I may say. And in case, for example, like ID-release donors, we have a system that we ensure we collect the appropriate information that we require in the future. And in general, our practice, Evgenia can correct me, we contact the donor every approximately a year to confirm their country of residence. If they change
address,
phone number. Yes, so we are in touch with them, and also they're being informed in our first appointment that if they would like to be at ID release, they need to keep us updated if they change a country of residence, if they change a phone number. Most of the cases, we have a very good response from our donors and they get back to us, because with our donors, we become, if I may, a family. We support for this the procedure. We are next to each other because we understand the willingness to help others and assist other couples and recipients to have a family by having a child as well. So the idea that it's not a proper recording keeping simply doesn't reflect in our OVACY egg bank. In reality, our egg bank includes documentation, traceability, and the data for all donors, including genetics, consents, screening, are secure and central pillar of modern fertility care of our egg bank.
Can I add that under the EU Tissue and Cells Directive, we are obliged to keep all this information for a minimum of 30 years. So for 30 years, from the moment that the information is collected, it's guaranteed that it will be kept under our clinic's IT infrastructure, let's say. And we have the option to extend if we want to. So after the 30 years, it's up to the discretion of each egg bank how long they retain the information for. So, and we also need to comply with the General Data Protection Regulation, which we do. So we have a very elaborate IT system in place, which helps us archive, because obviously we couldn't possibly keep everything active for 30 years. So I think after about 10 years, the information gets archived, it's kept for up to 30 years, and at that point, we'll make the decision as to whether we continue storing or not. And that's something that, at that point, I assume we would be in touch with our Ministry of Health to help with. I would assume that at that point, they take over the responsibility of retaining that information. But 30 years is a decent amount of time, because if we assume that any treatments taking place from the onset of our operations, which would be last year, then any children that would contact us potentially, that would happen within 18 years. So the 30-year period covers for even further, because not all children will feel ready at 18. They might want to contact at 25 or at 30. So at least we're giving them a chance well into adulthood if they feel that they do want to reach out to the donor. They will be able to do so, because we will have full access to that information. And also, if something goes wrong, as I said before, you know, we might need to track because of a genetic condition that arises. So we will retain that information. And by law, we have to for a minimum of 30 years.
Yeah. Is there like a backup or anything with that then, Christiana? Because that was one of the questions I actually had, because yeah. I think only because, you know, not at all to compare like with places like in the States, but I know a family, say, where they've used an egg bank or a sperm bank and they've gone bust. And then when their child has become of age that they could apply for that info, because there is no central body like, say, we have with the HFEA where they can apply, that point of contact disappears. So it's really interesting to hear you've got that 30 years. But yeah, is there like a backup to that? Should, yeah, have you, hopefully that would never happen. But if, no, worst case, oversupply ceased. Yeah.
So what happens is we have a third party agreement with another clinic in Nicosia in Cyprus. So if anything were to happen where, for example, we are not able to continue operating, we go bust, they would take on the genetic material, so the eggs, as well as all the information, and they continue to retain it for as long as needed. So we already have these agreements in place because, you know, there could be a fire, there could be something that renders you, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, if you go bust, but there are other things that can happen. Exactly. Where you would need to transfer potentially the material.
Material, not just the data, I suppose.
Material and data as well. So we do have something in place to protect patients from that scenario. Yeah.
And I suppose with any eggs that are being imported into the UK, that would kind of be, you'd have the guardrails there anyway, because the HFEA would have that donor details as well.
Exactly.
But that's really helpful. To know that actually, because Becky and I, that was one of the questions we had, wasn't it, right, when we sort of travelled to Cyprus. Goodbye. So it's interesting to hear.
So we did see the record keeping in practice, so all the different steps that you will assume. Very important with family limits as well. You've got to make sure that you're adhering to different family limits within that. So I hope that for anybody listening to this, you found it really reassuring. And I think an important message from us is to always do your research and make those informed choices. I think it's quite easy to look and go, oh, Cyprus is Cyprus, but actually you are doing things very differently. You are almost setting the standard in terms of what we would like to see within other egg banks and other clinics across Europe, to know that those things are in place, not only to protect and support recipients, but also donors as well. I think that is so important. Before we come to a close, are there any sort of final words that you would like to share with anybody who's listening, who may be thinking, oh, I've been thinking about maybe going abroad, or just maybe an overview of actually how people might be able to utilise your egg bank, Christiana, because I know you've got some partnerships with UK clinics, but there is also the opportunity to come to you direct as well.
Yes, there is. So how we operate is a patient can either contact us directly, so they can go to our website, www.oversea.com. We have a free open database of all our donors there that they can browse through. And then either their chosen clinic, so if they're patients at a UK clinic already, they can contact their clinic and say, I've found potentially an egg donor I would like to use on the OverCY platform, and the clinic will get in touch with us, or the patient can get in touch with us directly. All the contact information is on the website. If the patient is working with a clinic that we don't have a collaboration with yet, that's not an issue. We can set up a new collaboration, but the clinic will have to apply to the HFEA for an ITE approval, and that may take some time. If the clinic is already working with us, then it's very straightforward, and the donor eggs could be with them within about 2 weeks. So it's really straightforward. And I just want everyone to know that they can even get in touch with us if they're not planning to immediately go ahead with treatment, because patients will want to have a chat, and they, it's important that they feel comfortable with the egg bank that they ultimately choose to work with. So we are always open to having informal chats and responding to emails from anyone. Anastasia, Vinia, and the whole team all speak fluent English. They can respond to emails, they can set up calls, whatever the patient feels comfortable with. and we can answer all the questions. We're more than happy to do that. So yeah, just get in touch, and we're happy to provide information, even if ultimately, you know, you don't end up ordering eggs from us. That's fine. We just want to help as many people as we can.
Thank you. And you are going to be providing, like, as we said earlier, licenses to for people to be able to get the support from Paths to Parenthood as well. So we're just delighted that we're able to partner with you in that way, and that more people will get that support that they need. Thank you so much. I could speak to you all for hours because there's so many different things we covered on our visit, but I hope that really gives people a little insight into what goes on behind the scenes, because it's a lot of these things you just don't know about, and you don't know what you don't know. And hopefully that has opened your eyes a little bit. Now, in terms of where to find you, you are actually going to all be at the fertility show coming up in May. So that's the 16th and 17th, I believe. So do go and meet the ladies there and the rest of the team. They are really, really friendly, and I'm sure would welcome you coming over to say hello.
Yes.
With that, I just want to say a huge, huge thank you to all of you, not just for this episode, but for supporting the series. And this series, we've been able to share some personal stories. We've also spoken with Dr. Mavrides, and we also had the opportunity to chat with a donor as well, which was fascinating. I know we've had some really good feedback from that episode. So a massive thank you to everyone. Hopefully we will see you at the fertility show.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. Honestly, I'm so glad we bumped into each other in Paris last summer, and we managed to put all this together. Thank you. We're very, very grateful. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It was so nice meeting you in person and also having this podcast.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do take a moment to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget our free resources, including our recent webinar, Why Telling Matters, our friends and family resource, and lots more via our website.
So do come and join us in the Paths to Parenthood membership. We'd love to see you there.
Until next time.